Welcome to John Michael's Personal Branding Masterclass. John is the founder and CEO of Image Group International, an award-winning image consulting and personal branding pioneer established in 1989. This podcast will bring you old-school wisdom, inspiring ideas, strategies, and hacks for the new tech world. Here you will learn everything about personal branding, the system, the techniques, and the right mindset to have a successful personal brand, image, and reputation.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to my podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here with me today. In today's episode, we'll discuss what it takes to create a profitable business model that can also apply to any size company, large or small. As every entrepreneur knows, one of the main reasons why businesses fail is their inability to generate enough revenue to cover expenses and, of course, make a profit. And yes, a profit matters because entrepreneurship is about making a profit. Why do you need a profit? Very simple. Let me give you the obvious. Employing people, investing in plant and machinery, growth all require funds. And if you're not making a profit, then life in the real world can get quite challenging. That's why it's essential to have a sound and profitable business model in the first place. In this episode, we'll share some strategies business leaders can adopt to create a profitable business model. Now, I want to make it clear, you know, I'm not an accountant and I'm not a financial expert of any description. What I am is basically an entrepreneur that has learned a lot of these strategies, tactics, etc., from being in business for over 34 years. Of course, I've got a whole team in that has supported me to get to this level. So, you know, for some of you, it might be really one-on-one stuff. For others, it might be a little bit more valuable. But just bear with me, knowing that I'm sharing this particular information today because we're challenging times ahead, the economy all over the place, some businesses doing very well, thank you very much, others struggling. So I just want to get back to some of the basics, and hopefully this will make a difference to some of you listening today. The first strategy is to exploit new funding techniques, you know, to secure capital and resources, even in the event that you don't currently need it. And also what I'm going to cover is what new funding techniques are available besides traditional banks. So that means looking beyond traditional funding sources overall, like banks, and exploring new options, like, for instance, crowdfunding, angel investing, and grants. Although I will go a little bit deeper on this as I move along. So what's important about all of this is to have the funds before you need it. Because the problem is, if you haven't planned for this and then you need funds when you do need it and you haven't got that in order, then potentially you can be in serious trouble. And of course, a lot of businesses operate that way and a lot of them also go broke by doing that. So by leveraging these new opportunities, businesses can secure the capital and resources needed to start and grow their operations, especially if they've been proactive and done it up front. So the types of funding available that I want to share with you is one of them is debt raising. So there's two breakups of this between debt raising and secured debt. So I'm just going to give you a bit of a sense what debt raising is. Now, debt raising, of course, involves raising funds through loans provided by third parties. And the lenders of these debts historically have been, of course, banks and public debt markets, especially for a big company, i.e. like, you know, the bond market, but now includes a host of other financial institutions that are, and increasingly private equity funds, and you would have seen a lot of private equity funds going into raising a lot of money for even, you know, really, really big deals, because that's definitely in competition with banks now. But in its simplest form, debt raising involves paying the lender back its principal, right? And then an agreed amount of interest over the duration of the loan. So the key with this is, of course, theoretically, this model can work also for a very small company as well. You just got to need somebody that's going to come into that engagement to back it and actually fund whatever the deal is going to be. But give you a sense of the size of the debt market in 2021. So this is the global debt market. It was valued at $303 trillion. Means that anyone debt raising can avail to multiple forms of debt. So you can do this in all different ways. So we're talking about here a gigantic sum. Now, if you have a look at that also, is why we've had extraordinary growth, especially in the West, over the last 15 years since the last financial crisis of 2008. So there's been a lot of cheap money. Now, what that's done, of course, is really expanded the economy and has created a very, very big bubble. Now, lenders can also include a range of terms and conditions on their loans that protect them on the downside in the event that your company cannot pay or will not pay the money. In broad terms, there are four terms of debt that companies can avail themselves of. One of them is secured debt. This is where collateral is used to secure the loan, thus enabling the company to avail of lower interest rates as the risk is lower for the lender. Now, that could be a typical small business and the owner, founder has their house on the line as secured debt. Unsecured debt, though, is the next form. And this form of debt includes no borrower collateral, so the interest rate depends on the company's credit history. Now, this generally is a more established company and, of course, a larger company. And what's important here is the relationships you have with the bank as well. All of this come into play when we're talking about companies' credit history. The next one is tax-exempt corporate debt. Some debt may be eligible also for tax exemption. And right now, of course, a lot of projects, especially in the US, you'd have to check locally in your own jurisdiction, but certainly projects in the US related to sustainability are definitely getting major tax exemptions. And you never know, with the budget in Australia coming out in the next few days, the same thing might happen here in a new way. So the next one also is convertible debt. Now, usually convertible debt is considered a hybrid. And what that means is it's a mixture of debt and equity, whereby the debt can be converted into equity if the borrower prefers. And that's definitely a great vehicle, depending what the needs and interests are of each particular party. So which type of debt a company raises depends on a number of different factors. And primarily, it's the condition of their financial statements, and in particular, the amount of debt outstanding on the balance sheet. Okay, so if they, got a good balance sheet, then obviously the debt raising becomes a lot easier. And of course, their credit then is also normally fairly good, so they would have a lot more chance of accessing what they're looking for. So their credit rating history and the quality of the collateral and borrowers and lenders' own appetite for risk also comes into play. At most points of an economic cycle, debt is possible for a company to raise, like I've just explained to you with what's been going on in the world with a lot of, what I would call is easy money being lent out to corporations all over the planet. But the cost of interest is not always attractive when the market turns, and that's what you're seeing here. And of course, cost of interest is going up, inflation is going up, so you've got other, challenges come into play. That's why you need to get your finance and your whole business model spot on. And if you haven't got it spot on right now, you better get it spot on. And this is where it's a combination of good accounting, but also, the entrepreneurial street smarts, because in my experience, accountants cannot make you money. They do you something with the books after the money is made. So that's where you still need marketing. You still need promotions. You need all the stuff, that's more emotionally based in reference to attracting clients and so on, as opposed to being, really logical where numbers normally are. But you need a combination of both. That's my point. And number two is equity raising. Equity raising, I love. Equity raising occurs when a company seeks to raise funds through the sale of its equity, a share in the ownership of the company. Now, this doesn't work for everybody, and I've worked with clients that don't want to do any of that. But from the point of view, if you've got enough strength and power in the company, of course, the equity investors can generally be anyone that possesses the cash required and is willing to meet the company's owners on its valuation, and this is obviously very, very popular as well. And what that means is a company that overvalues its equity risk, of course, alienating most of investors, and you don't want to be doing that, who will fear not seeing the real adequate return on their investment and might see the valuation as a little bit questionable. Okay, so you've got to watch how you're going to do these valuations. That's why a fair valuation without overdoing that is important. Having said that, this is where I believe branding does come into play, because I've been involved with numerous valuations with clients, specifically with branding, positioning, and putting out the story has actually helped the valuation. Again, something that at times the numbers people underplay as not that important. Well, In my experience, yes, that's what they say, but that's not what actually happens. So most companies with positive outlooks, i.e. their equity is attractive to investors that, of course, can avail of equity funding. Like debt raising, though, certain equity raising agreements can have different conditions attached. And when this happens, it is usually referred to as preferred equity. You know, the stock market is the largest and most well-known method of equity raising, where publicly listed companies sell their equity to raise funds and maintain liquidity. So there's pros and cons of equity raising. And the pros are access to the management advice, of course, of seasoned equity investors, okay? And no requirement for regular interest repayments, with, you know, as with debt raising. Possibility for company manager to set the company valuation. So technically a lower risk solution than debt raising. The cons, of course, is the company management is giving up some of its controlling interest, maybe in the business. The equity might come with some provisions on consulting the investors on big decisions, and the presence of external investors can lead to friction within the company, especially when agendas do not align. The upside potential of the company now has to be shared with outsiders, and some people might not like that. And examples of equity raising might be, there are several kinds of raising equity, with the big differentiator being between them, the stage of the company's evolution to which it applies to. In broad terms, though, the different types of equity raising, okay, in chronological order from early companies to mature companies are normally crowdfunding. And crowdfunding could also be, of course, your family, your friends, etc. Seed financing, angel financing, venture capital, and private equity. And of course, the big one, public capital markets for listed firms. So all of the above can be also hybrids of part debt and part equity. And that also could happen in a small company as well. There's no limitations here. It's a matter of how you structure the deal. The second strategy, though, is to develop after the financing, is to develop a comprehensive marketing strategy to drive customer acquisition and loyalty. And a good question is this: what are some examples of comprehensive marketing strategy to drive customer acquisition and loyalty? You know, this means obviously creating a strong brand identity. Remember, your brand is what communicates the market. So a lot of people say, oh, that doesn't make the biggest difference. Look, marketing is essential. Okay, it's how you're going to get noticed, recognized, and valued. Without that, you're kidding yourself. Okay, companies would not spend billions and billions and billions of dollars if it didn't work. So this means creating a strong brand identity that resonates with customers, using marketing techniques that align with the company's mission and, of course, values. So a well-designed marketing strategy can help, of course, businesses attract clients and then retain them, which is essential for long-term profitability. And this is important because a lot of online businesses, especially in the service areas, want to get the business, okay? But sometimes their methods of retaining, in my opinion, are questionable because they think just because they got the initial business now, oh, it's going to be hunky-dory from here on. No, a lot of other things have to come into play as well. But first, you've got to attract, right? And that's where marketing comes in. And then to retain, that's when you've got your systems around that customer service, customer outreach, constant customer contact, etc., that plays a big role, essential for, of course, long-term relationships. So my story on this is this. Before you sell anything, product or service, you must first build awareness. I can't stress this enough, okay? And this is interesting because that's where the big difference is. So it's about building awareness. And the strategy around that is, you know, you've got to build, once you've got awareness, you've got to build a comprehensive outreach campaign. You know, that involves also, of course, social media. We know the power of social media. And of course, email comms. That's at times underplayed. So you need email comms because you need to then engage customers and supporters. Otherwise, if you're just doing it on social media, that's great. But there's also, I believe, e-comms, or certainly email, plays a big, big difference in reference to constantly nurturing the relationship. So remember this, if you plan to sell anything, you must first build awareness followed by connection. Okay, connection does not happen first. You're going to build awareness first. So a smart use of social media might be definitely a powerful tool for any business to use right now. It can also go against you, by the way, if you're not using it effectively, but it's definitely a powerful tool when used effectively, and of course builds relationship with customers and supporters. And also, you know, you get to solicit honest feedback and ideas that can definitely be put into use with your business. By using social media though smartly, businesses can also create a community of supporters, a tribe, who are invested also in their success, considering you're giving them all this value and are willing to advocate on their behalf, or in this case, your behalf. So building a community, building a database, scraping the database and exporting it also to your internal system from social media, i.e. could be LinkedIn, could be Facebook, etc., is essential, okay? Because long term, you know, as a side note, the reason you want to scrape information and create your own database offline from the social media companies is because you can't trust the tech companies in the event that they claim your customers as theirs. Many, many examples of that online. And if you want to know more about that, just do a search and you'll see that that's happened many, many times. So you don't want to do that, because you're putting now your business at risk. And from a risk assessment point of view, this is where, you know, you potentially have not considered all the aspects of what that could mean to your business if they actually lock you out. In addition to these strategies, business should also focus on operational efficiencies, okay? And that means also, yes, some cost reductions, right? And it's really interesting because cost reductions are an essential component as well of constantly evolving as a business. Now, I'm a big fan of obviously spending to grow, okay? Obviously, but at times, yeah, if you have to cut costs in certain areas that are not producing the results you were expecting or have gone down or aren't working that well, of course, you got to revisit that. And then investigate the new revenue streams where by streamlining processes, you know, negotiating better deals, you know, diversifying your offerings, and also, of course, expanding into new markets. And I've said that before previously, expanding into new markets essential. Zoom and all the online video platforms, of course, have opened those opportunities well in the last 3 years. And you'd be crazy not to look at it, considering it's a great opportunity to build beyond your borders. So while these strategies can help businesses create a profitable business model, it's important to note that there's no one-size-fits-all approach. So every business is unique, and what works for one business might not work for another, obviously. However, for adopting a combination of these strategies and being open to experimenting with new ideas, businesses can create a business model that will create growth and definitely wealth opportunities. And if you're not thinking that way, then it's like, I don't know anyone in business that wouldn't be thinking of growth and definitely creating wealth. It's just an essential component of why entrepreneurs go into business. Of course, we want to make a difference. Of course, we want to solve our clients' problems, challenges, issues, whatever the term you want to use is. But in the end, we're not a charity. Okay, we need to create growth so we can create wealth. Okay, we celebrate that because that's what free enterprise is all about. Now, so what I'd like to do is, you know, share with you a real-life example of a client that successfully implemented these strategies, okay, definitely has come out as a real winner. Now, this particular firm, we started working with them. They didn't need any finance at the time. They were traveling very well, okay. But what happened was, at times, they weren't that recognized from a branding point of view. Their branding was a little bit all over the place, including simple stuff like their logos, you know, and their brochures and their website, and, you know, the simple stuff, right? Even they were a little bit outdated. So we created a whole plan together in repositioning them, rebranding them, relaunching them into the market. But at the same time, still doing what they're doing and, of course, coaching behind the scenes to ramp up the leadership of the company. But at the same time, working on the what we call is the fun optics, the fun visual stuff. So as we're doing that, we also coach, you know, the leadership for me. Branding for me is not just a marketing decision for marketing people, okay? It's also for senior leadership because it plays parts specifically into communications and, of course, reputation. So through that, we also revamped some of the leadership, including how they looked, including getting new visuals of them, everything from the leaders presenting differently to, of course, new clothes. Yes, the package is the key here. And of course, I already mentioned the corporate comms makeover. You know, other than the website and the typical branding collateral, we also looked at their trucks. It was a mid-sized company, well over $200 million. And basically their trucks and everything that they had a connection with. And what that did was set them up to a new position where they looked really professional. And of course, to the point where customers also noted and of course commented. So that was followed by media outreach. This is to mainstream media and also social media. Okay. And that was also a very important part of the business approach, because media, of course, is an important tool in utilizing and getting your messaging out there. And this is essential, especially for a lot of small businesses that don't understand the power of media. And the way you've got to look at it is this way. Yes, I know. If you've got tight funds, okay, if you've got limited funds, if you haven't got enough, all of that can come into play and make you feel a little bit, oh, it's too expensive or it's too out of our reach. It's not true. There's different ways where you can do this and do this fairly conservatively, as opposed to thinking, you know, the big media campaigns on TV or major media, what that would cost. No, it doesn't have to be like that for you. Every company is different. But the media outreach for me that I've explained many, many times is very, very important in getting your messaging out there. But this is the key. So this company here, interesting, it was a $200 million odd company, private, okay? And guess what happened? From that, and I didn't know this at the time, part of the plan was, I discovered it obviously after as we started working together, was to launch it into the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange, and raise funds, of course, so they can become then a, you know, public company. That's what they'll become by being on ASX. And at the same time, you know, have a lot more reserves so they can do bigger and better things. Now, from that perspective of the new look for this company, basically it actually helped their strategic funding and fundraising models, because they started to look a lot bigger than they were. Where before, that, you know, great little company, but they looked a little bit outdated and certainly looked a lot smaller. So there's a, you know, so the story with this, it actually helped their funding. You know, their funding, they raised a lot more money because they looked like they deserve to be that big. And this is interesting because, you know, if you look at the psychology of this, a business is like a human being, okay? If a human being looks, and you want to hear me for what this is, looks like it's not going to make it, like a loser, right? Okay? I have to use that term so you really get it. If a company also looks like a loser, what do you expect? And this is, you know, from a very simple psychology perspective. So I prefer to do authentically. This is not about faking it. Authentically put out the messaging out there, and at the same time, use all the aesthetics you want to, you know, to put your best face to the world. So to conclude, every business needs to create awareness, assuming there's no awareness, okay? So I'm talking about a startup will have no awareness, to an established, you know, he's already got awareness, but you're still constantly creating awareness. Awareness does not stop. Because if they think you're already well known and you don't need to keep on creating awareness, well, think about Coca-Cola. Why do they keep on creating awareness? Why does McDonald's keep on creating awareness, etc.? Why? Because they know in the human psychology, if you stop doing that, eventually there will be a time where people will forget about you. You don't want to do that, especially when you're a small business. Number two is to get connected. So the reason we're talking about get connected, right, is because that's why we're doing awareness. Obviously, for people to come to us, we get connected. And then number three, we start engagement. And engagement is really the commencement where now you've got an opportunity to sell, enroll, whatever approach you're using to get the customer into your business model. Okay, and that's what I would call is the time now, after you've done all of that, yes, to win the business, okay? And to win the business, you definitely have to do the sale eventually, whatever you want to call that, okay? Because in the end, it's going to be a conversion of some description. And we would say winning the business is, of course, part of having a profitable business model, obviously, right? So to sort of finalize my point here, so exploring new funding techniques, by the way, gives you a step ahead because you're aware, you're looking for other opportunities. Developing a comprehensive marketing strategy is a no-brainer from my perspective. And of course, adopt a comprehensive social media strategy. That's smart. You know, creating the operational efficiencies, reducing costs, and exploring new streams for me is a smart way to build a profitable business and a business model, of course, that will lead to long-term success. So we've come to the end of the episode for today. I hope you have found this episode insightful and provided you with, you know, inspiration and ideas to apply to your business. Remember to stay current with the latest business and entrepreneurship trends by following us on social media. You can find me on Twitter at @John_Michael, on LinkedIn as John Michael, and on Facebook as Image Group International. So till next time, go out there and create your best. Cheers.
John Michael's Personal Branding Masterclass podcast is sponsored by Image Group International, a global team of practical, digitally savvy personal brand and image strategists based in Australia, committed to maximizing your impact, influence, and authority in the business world. To learn more and apply for your personal coaching, seminars, and group workshops, please visit imagegroup.com.au or call 1-800-631-311.